We're going to continue our series on legacies. We got a little set out here. Here's my wife, Jamie. She just flew in from a conference late last night, got delayed because of the weather. And so we're just seeing each other. We didn't get to talk last night. So good to see you.
He was up praying. I was busy sleeping.
we got to catch up during the first service real fast. And we've got some stuff for you. We're going to jump in and continue to talk about how or the building blocks of legacy. I want you to know this. There is no story that God cannot redeem.
Right.
So whatever season of life you're in, whether it's bad, whether it's good, if the past is frightening, God can redeem your story. We heard it already in the testimony of Sherwin and Ann. And I want you to know that God can redeem whatever the enemy has tried to bring against you. You've heard this scripture that God will take what the enemy meant for evil and he will work it for your good. Yep. So today we're going to talk about the legacy building block of marriage. So we know change starts with me. Legacy starts with me. We're going to talk about marriage and relationships. Now, not everybody in the room is married. This message will speak to every season of life. Okay, so whether you're single and you want to be married, whether you have been married, whether you've went through a divorce or you are currently married right now, this will speak to you. So this is what I want to ask everybody, is that you would lean in with a teachable heart. That you just do your best just to be teachable, that you allow the Holy Spirit to speak to you. Because I think sometimes with marriage relationships or any relationships, awareness is probably half the battle. Is just us bringing up this topic and talking about it is going to kind of unearth some things in you. And what our desire is, and I believe God's plan is to stir hope in you and even excitement. Yeah. For what God's going to do through you and through your legacy. Deuteronomy chapter 6 has been our text that we've been pulling this series from. It says there, these are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, this is the legacy, ready? So that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy a long life. There's a lot of testimonies of people that have been married for a long time. I'm going to tell you that for me, that's incomplete.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be married for a long time. I want to be married for a long time and
happy.
I don't want to just endure for decades. I want to enjoy decades. Okay. So we're going to talk about some things, the building blocks of the marriage legacy. But I want you to allow the Lord just to speak to you in whatever season that you're in. I think for many of us, we have like expectations of what marriage is going to be like. So for the married people in the room, did you have any expectations of marriage before you got married that were wrong after you got married?
Yes.
Okay. You care to share?
You tell me to be me. Jamie's gonna Jamie. Jamie's got a Jamie.
What was yours?
Oh, man. There are so many. I think like we all, anybody who is married knows the reality of this, right? Like you go in thinking like, I thought he was gonna literally like worship the ground I walked on for the next 50 years. Like, and there were so many different things, but when I was really thinking about it, boiling it down to the majors, I think, which you'll agree with on your side as well, is that my expectation was that we would be my family. Like my family is the Klein family. And when we got married, I didn't really realize that I was marrying somebody from a different culture, right? And from a different family. And so I would always wonder with him, well, my family is very independent. We have different jobs. We went to different schools. We made different life choices. Very close, but we're very independent of each other. I could not show up for 3 days at home, and my parents would be like, I'm sure she's at Katie's. Like, and just not even stress about it. Like, we just kind of were informal and kind of like flexible, all the flexibility. And his family's very connected. They're very close. They're formally like supportive of each other. They're at each other's stuff. All of his sisters would come to all of his and his brother's softball games, right? And so I married somebody so different from me. And as I did, I realized that oh, like what I could label as bad is actually just a different culture. And I remember one day in our early year of marriage, I had to go to Costco, like one does. And so I'm like headed up to Costco to get all my Kirkland signature stuff, right? And I just left town. Our Costco was 30 minutes away, and I just drive to Costco. Like, I would disappear from my family's house for days, right? Well, this isn't how his family worked. They always knew where each other were, right? And so I get back from Costco, and he's like, where have you been? This is before Find My Friends. It was even before, like, cell phones, maybe. No, there were cell phones. Mine just wasn't.
She literally drove a horse and buggy.
Mine just wasn't on, probably. The battery was probably dead. And so I come back, and he's kind of, like, upset about that I went to Costco. And I'm like, oh, no. I married a psychopath. And here's what we do. Instead of trying to understand his heart and his culture, I start to label him as controlling, right? Controlling and needy. He's got to know where I am all the time. And he's so controlling. I can't even go pick up some Kirkland signature nuts without him needing a play-by-play, right? And he could label me as well as withholding, insensitive, not respectful. Well, both of our hearts were so good. We are just bringing two different cultures to it. So I think a lot of our expectations of marriage, and then we start to build off of those, that mind reading and those labels. And then we land 17 years later, sometimes having the same conversation we had 17 years ago, right? Because it's, oh no, we have to remember. We're two very separate people trying to become one, right? And so I think that was one of the things for me, I think was very much your experience too, probably. Like you expected me to like want to go paragliding with you on our honeymoon.
Yes. And other things.
Yeah.
We went on our honeymoon and it was incredible. I had an entire schedule lined out in my mind of what the honeymoon would look like.
Starting with 5 a.m. prayer.
And
No, I'm joking. In his wildest dreams.
And Jamie brought one of her favorite books because she thought like our honeymoon would be like a great time for her to get some alone time. It's like a little vacation. She could just have some alone 100%. Time and read a book. And I'm like, I have waited 25 years to hang out with my wife. So I'd rather not read a book. I do have a book of things I'd like to do and try. But anyways, we all bring to the marriage relationship
what we expect.
What we expect. Yep. And if we're not careful, we will put those expectations on each other. And it's funny, right? It's funny. It wasn't funny then.
No, it was not funny.
It wasn't funny when we actually went through them. These are actual problems that we went through.
Yeah.
And it was difficult for us because I wanted her to be like how I was raised.
Right.
And she wanted me to be like how she was raised. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is we both had incredible families.
Right.
Really good families, just totally different.
Yes.
So I think as we're launching into this, we have to go back to our very first building block of what legacy is consists of and how it's built. Legacy starts with who? Me. Even in marriage, legacy starts with me.
Yep.
Let me say it this way. The only person I have the authority / power / control power or authority to change is myself. And I think in marriage relationships, when we bring in leadership and we bring in submission and all of these things, there's a lot of storylines that get very convoluted. But at the end of the day, I have to lead me.
Yes.
I can change me. I'm responsible for my heart. I'm responsible for my forgiveness. Yes. I'm responsible for my heart posture and Jamie for hers.
Yes.
When we begin to cross over the lines and begin to control one another, we get in the way of the thing that God wants to do through us.
And for single people as well in the room. Like we love speaking to single people because no matter what you've been through, and I'm sure everybody in the room has regrets except for Pastor Cameron, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, but everybody has regrets, right? But if you're single, you really do have a fresh slate. A lot of us are married and have to go back and rebuild. We have to go back and deal with stuff. We got to go back and forgive. We got to go back and hash stuff out. You have a fresh slate. Legacy starts with me. And here's the cool thing is we attract who we are. So if you work on building legacy in yourself, you will attract somebody who is building legacy in themselves.
Right.
Pastor Madison, before she was married to her amazing husband, Marshall, who we all adore, she was single with us for a long time. And I mean, the amount, if I had a dollar for every guy that God had told them in prayer that Madison was meant for them, I would be a rich woman. All the time. And we see a guy coming. Can we talk to you, God? Can we talk to you? And we're like, here we go again. Madison's number seven, right? And I remember thinking one time, like, Madison is pouring her heart into her legacy. She's correcting all of the things in her past that have held her back. She is in the presence of God. She is in the local church. She is given to a season of singleness. She is doing all the things to make her legacy starts with me. And one of these jokers would come up who can't hold down a job, who treats people poorly, who treats every other girl in the room poorly except for Madison, right? Who disrespects his leaders, who doesn't have his purity under control, who is rude, who plays video games all night long. And he's like, but the Lord is
set. Can be a career these days.
It actually can. That's true. No offense to Pastor Grant. He's killing it.
We love you.
We love you, Pastor Grant. Actually, yeah, that's a good point. But I remember thinking back to the single ones, right? I remember thinking like, they all wanted her, but I was like, why is God gonna curse her with you? Like, you gotta, if you want a 10, be a 10. And this is the great thing is, we can do that. Madison has reworked her entire life from her childhood. Pastor Spencer in Frisco has reworked her entire life since her childhood. We can do that, but we do it with us and it starts with us. And here's the thing too about, for the single ones with legacy starts with us. When we get married, marriage doesn't fix anything. It only enhances what was there before. So a lot of the times we think, well, if I get married, then I won't struggle with my purity. Or if I get married, I won't be insecure anymore. Or if I get married, nope, marriage does not fix us. Marriage should be a 10 and a 10 coming together, right? Not without problems. We have had ours. You'll hear a lot about them. But again, legacy starts with us. So if you are single, celebrate and focus on the legacy. And be in your local church, in the presence of God, and you watch who God brings.
Right. Also, if you're single, just lift your hand and just look around. And maybe we can solve that today for you.
Okay. I would love that. I love love. I would love that.
let's just say this as we dive into this. Marriage is not man's idea.
Yeah.
Woman's idea. Marriage is God's idea.
Yep.
Marriage began with Adam and Eve in the very beginning. It was in Mark chapter 10, Mark's account of the gospel, when he quotes Genesis, he says, chapter 10, verse 6, but at the beginning of creation, God made them. God created us for relationship. God made us male and God made us female. So this is really important as we teach the next generation in the midst of all kinds of cultural narratives that the way that God created marriage was to be and is to be between a man and a wife. In fact, we were created male and female. So it's not the gender that we identify with. It is how God created us. Before we were formed in our mother's womb, He knew us. He created us. So marriage is God's idea. So a lot of times there's confusion because we want the blessing of God on our romantic relationship, but we're not doing the romantic relationship God's way. You don't get God's blessing unless you do things God's way. So in our culture, it's really popular to live together. Before you're married, we're just partners. We're trying things out. And if you're in the room and you're doing that, that's fine. But hear me on this. You can't receive God's blessing, even if you love each other deeply, until you enter into covenant. Because covenant is what contains the love, passion, emotion, intimacy that God put in you to enjoy. So before we go too far, we have to just set the foundation of what God created as marriage. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It should be protection. It should be fulfillment. All of your intimate, all of your sexual desires, fantasies, all of those things can be contained in the covenant. Got quiet in here. God can be contained in the covenant of marriage. You don't get married and then die to all of your desires. You get married and bring what God created under covenant where He intended for it to be enjoyed.
In Genesis, when God created everything, it's good, right? And in the beginning of time. And the first thing that wasn't good is a man alone.
Right.
And so I always like to say that women were the answer to the world's first problem. Oh.
Very good.
My asterisk on Genesis. But really, it is a God-designed thing. It's, and marriage can be such a heavy, and there's so much stuff. But the purpose of it is to be satisfying to us and glorifying to Him. And we can have that, no matter what we've been through, when we do it His way.
Yes.
And follow His manual.
So good. So as we begin in this, whether you're single, whether you're married, there are things that move us backwards. Yeah. In our relationships and things that move us forward. Okay, so we're going to fly through a lot of different things, and some of them are going to be heavy, okay? So no elbowing your spouse in here, all right? Just hold your elbows, behave yourself, because some of these things will connect with our own story and where we are. So we're no one's perfect here. Yeah. We have all kinds of our own issues that we're working through, but we want to try to set even some very simple, practical ideas of what will break apart your marriage legacy and what will move it forward. Yeah. Some people that get married and they stop trying, so they shift into neutral. Neutral is a slow form of death. If you give up trying, it is only a matter of time before you begin to die. Okay, there has to be intentionality. A fire has to be fueled. A fire has to be tended. So the fire of intimacy, of love, of passion in your own heart and life, that is something that you have to give yourself to, attention to, intentionality to. Otherwise, you will go the other way. So we're going to talk about some of these things first that kind of pull us back. There are things that will move your marriage in essence backwards. And the first one is this: wrong atmospheres. Okay, wrong atmospheres. And we're going to go through this quickly. And some of this is going to be convicting. It's very simple, but I want you to hear this. Yelling, swearing, put downs, name calling, all create the wrong atmosphere in your home. Yeah. I know for many of us, we're like, well, that's just my personality. Well, then you need to stop. No, it's not a personality. It's a choice. We don't raise our voice. We don't scream at each other. We don't swear at each other. We don't put each other down. Did you know that your kids live in the atmosphere that you create with your marriage?
Yeah.
So if you want them to be something different than you are, you have to model something different than you're modeling.
Yeah.
I have to model what I want them to be. So the atmosphere of the home needs to be safe. Pastor, you don't understand my marriage. We are in a tough time. I get it. But instead of taking your anger out on the person that you love the most, why don't you take that anger to a counselor, to a trusted friend, to a gym, to something productive, and so that you don't break down the thing that is actually the love that you actually want to build and leave a legacy in. Does this make sense? It's practical. But you would be surprised how widespread the culture of toxicity,
yeah.
Is that what you say, right? Is in our homes with negativity, mm-hmm. put downs, swearing, name calling. It should be nowhere in our Christian homes.
We try and model for our kids good discussions, right? Because I grew up in a family that was almost too perfect to me. I never saw my parents really work through anything. And then when we got married, I was like, oh wait, people have to work through things, right? And so it was one of my intentional things that I don't want to just be like, la, 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 kids, mommy and daddy always love each other and we're perfect all the time, because they're going to get married and their wife's going to go to Costco. And I want them to learn how to hear it. And so our son calls it when we talk. So we'll just talk in front of them and I'll be like, I don't think that. I think that. Never escalated. Never mean, always calm, sometimes laughing. And he calls it a tiff, right? Tiff. A tiff. He goes,
are you guys in a tiff?
Are you guys in a tiff, right? And then when they get in a tiff, our two boys, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. They've seen how to solve tiffs. You know, so we're not saying the hypocrisy is the worst thing we can ever do for our children, right? And so I don't want to just close a door and hear them to hear us going at it. Oh, I don't want that for them. And they will model what we do. And so definitely not saying be hypocrites and pretend to be perfect, but model healthy confrontation.
And let me just say this, that your marriage might not be in a healthy place. So you have right now a cycle of dysfunction. And I get that and understand that. But what we're saying today is that we're going to address and then we're going to stop the dysfunction. Yeah. So if you need to get help in some way, or you need to get help for anger, or you need to be proactive, yes, and do that. But to just live, yeah, in a toxic culture where you're just, there's complete negativity, I can't imagine how much life could fill your home if you just did this one simple practical thing, yeah, is that we build one another up.
Yes.
We talk, doesn't mean we don't disagree. Mm-hmm. We have disagreements, but we talk in tones that can be understood. Mm-hmm. If we're angry, we get angry. If we're angry, we need to take a break. We need to go take a break. And we need to come back and have an adult conversation and work through things. Wrong atmospheres. The next one is this: faulty commitments. This is massive because for many of us, we just assume that we have just great commitment to one another. But this would be, and I could break it down this way, talking about, considering, or threatening divorce. The more you use those words or that action as a weapon, the more it will become an option. So our commitment is to one another. Now, let me say pastorally, we never counsel people to stay in abusive relationships. So our counsel pastorally would always be, if you are encountering harm or if there's abuse in a relationship, you need to remove yourself from that situation. Now, our pastoral counseling would never be to divorce. So as a pastoral team, we don't counsel people to divorce. We will counsel you to be safe, to remove yourself from situations. So we understand that there's a variety of scenarios that are represented in a room this size. But I want you to know this, that a commitment to each other is not a commitment just if things are going well. This commitment, and over 17 years, it's grown now at such a deeper level that I'm going to make mistakes. And I know Jamie's committed to me. She's going to make mistakes and she knows I'm committed to her. But too many times our commitment is based on performance. And that is an unhealthy way to live, knowing that if I don't do this right, or if I don't love them right, or if I don't sleep with them right, then the commitment drops. No, that pressure is not love, friends.
Right.
The love is that commitment that stands through the storms or stands the test of time. Faulty commitments. Let me give you another one. This is difficult, okay? This is difficult. Not having secrets. This is hidden lives. This is something for the single people, you have to begin now. This is not something you get married and then you begin this. This is something you begin right now. I'm not going to have secret parts of my life that no one knows about. I used to tell our college students, you don't have to tell everyone everything, but you do have to tell someone everything. Anything that you don't reveal, it's a little cliche, God does not have the power to heal. So if you want to be healed, then you got to reveal. Now, there's little practical ways like this. I don't have hidden text threads that Jamie doesn't know about. I don't have a hidden calendar. I don't have a hidden phone that I can text people that she doesn't know about. I don't have hidden social media account that she doesn't know about. She doesn't have hidden social media that I don't have. I have the password to her. I think I have the password to a social media. She has the password to my social media.
No, I don't.
Actually, she...
I don't remember.
That's true. Right, now, you don't.
For a reason.
Would you like to explain why?
I was banned.
You've been...
I was on his social media because we can go between each other's, you know? And so one day I was on his and I thought I was on mine. Yeah, you can see where this is going. And so some of the staff girls are like posting cute pictures, you know? Yes, babe. Fire emoji, fire emoji. Never looked better. Legs for days. Yes. Yes, work it, girl. Under his account. He goes, that's it. That's it. Binky's having the password now. I'm banned, which I'm very happy to be. But yes, that is a principle of our life.
So there is one thing she doesn't have access to, and there's good reason to it. We'd like to keep our jobs.
Yes, queen. Oh, man, that was
no
a bad
hidden
so bad
lives. It would be alarming. It would be alarming to you if you knew how many conversations that we have with men and women, yep, who said, if my husband ever found that out, if my wife ever found that out. So I've hidden accounts or hidden stories or hidden friends. You guys, if you want to build a legacy through your marriage, there has to be a commitment here that is faithful. This has to mean more than your best friend since college. You don't understand how close she is to me. Well, that's a problem. If she's that close, that gets in the way of this, and you don't feel led to share that friendship with this, that's a problem.
Gotta go.
In fact, we don't have friends that the other person does not feel good or feel comfortable with.
I was with three of my best friends this weekend at the conference, and they're like, oh, Dustin, we love Dustin. Tell Dustin hi. Tell him we said, like, my friends love him. His friends, I saw two of his best friends at the conference. I'm out with the families. We're talking. They would always have my back. My friends will always have his back.
Absolutely.
My friends would never let me just run my mouth about him.
Absolutely.
Because they love me and they love him.
And I think a really important point is that doesn't happen accidentally. This is what we're talking about with legacy. Everything that we talk about with legacy is intentional. It's that you have to make a decision to. You know why it's important for you to be in local church? Because if you're in local church, you're going to make friends with other believers.
Yeah. So true.
And your kids are going to make friends with others, believers' kids. And it's like, and I don't want my kids to date a non-Christian. Then you better be in church because they're going to date the kids that they hang out with. And if you're not committed to the local church, they're going to be friends with the people they spend the most time with. This is practical. I have to be intentional about building legacy in our lives. So one of the things that we've set up is that we're not going to have secrets, that we're going to not have a hidden life. And this would be, I think, as we're speaking right now and you're thinking, oh man, I've got a lot of things that we never talk about, then you just need to today make a decision that I need to begin moving forward. You can take baby steps, but our destination is that there are no secrets. Honestly, it's a really good way to feel, to know that there's no part of your life that is secret that you have to worry about. Oh no, did she check my photos?
Right.
Oh no, did she check my text? I have to explain. It's really good feeling.
Yeah.
Some of you don't have this feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really good feeling to know, like, yeah, she can check whatever.
I love being tracked. Because I always think I'm going to get murdered. Although true crime, it's always the spouse. But wow. I love it. The other day I was like, well, you're tracking me, right? And he goes, Jamie, no, I have no idea where you are. I was like, you're not tracking me all day? Like, you don't know where I am because...
I tried to track you when you went to Costco. That did not end well.
You gave up. But it is such a good feeling that, like, oh, I love it because I'm not up to anything. It's such a peace.
Yes.
There's such a peace we have.
There's such a peace.
That we had to fight for.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we obviously the things that move us backwards are not fun to talk about. They're not enjoyable, and maybe some people feel conviction. You might be feeling good, like, man, that's not me. So great, congratulations. I want to flip it now with the rest of our time, and I really want to talk about the things that will move you forward. Okay, these things, some of them are so practical, you know them. But it's important for us, honestly, to just apply our brains, our minds, to how do I consistently, you may have been married for 40 years and be happy as can be. Well, I want you to still lean in, because legacy is not about I have it good so I can stop. Legacy is about continuing so that I pass it on to the next generation. So let me give you some of these. Number one is I have to have a commitment to be a student. For me, this was really difficult because I grew up in ministry. And so I've been a student of relationships. I've been a student of people dynamics. I've been a student of marriage for years, for decades. So when we got married, I was such a expert in marriage, but I was not an expert in Jamie. This is really important because sometimes we will have principles that we know are right, but because we know they're right, we're not in tune with who we're with.
Right.
So I had to understand that I could be an expert in some people dynamics, but those people might not be her.
Yeah.
So I have to have a commitment to be teachable, to be not an expert of just marriage. I've got to be an expert of Jamie. And so on and so forth.
And I think that can be hard for us because we both want the other one to be like ourselves.
Right.
Right? And so even on like our second anniversary, I was a missionary. I'm the simplest. Jamie's got a Jamie. I'm pretty simple. When we got married, I had two pairs of shoes, right? I like my dream night is like sweatpants and, you know, takeout in a movie. And for our second anniversary, he went and rented, what was it?
A Corvette.
A bright yellow Corvette, dress up night, full meal deal, like steakhouse. And I'm just like, oh no, 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 no.
Like the conventional.
Yes.
Cultural, amazing date.
He goes, my sisters would kill for this date.
But no awareness.
This is our point.
Does this make sense?
Yes.
Like, that's a fail.
Yep.
On my behalf. And you know what I argued with? How many people would love that? It. Well, yep. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm not married to anybody else. The only thing that matters is that I'm a student of her.
Yes.
Do you see how we can do this, though? We start saying, well, somebody else would. Man, somebody else would be really grateful for a Corvette and a steak dinner.
We do, yep. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter.
Nope.
I'm not married to them.
Right.
I'm married to her.
And to your credit, every anniversary now, it's sweatpants movie.
And it's so much cheaper.
Get me.
What was I doing?
Love me. And people want to be seen.
This is easy.
People want to be seen and known for who they are and loved for who they are. Yeah. And we can so quickly try to just, if I could just fix this.
And you even felt bad, right?
Oh, I felt so bad.
That you didn't enjoy
it. Didn't like it.
That you didn't like it.
Because I knew your heart was to bless
me. You're telling me to not wreck the Corvette.
Yeah. I was like, don't wreck the Corvette.
A commitment to be a student. Second one is this. A commitment to change. You're going to have to, if you're going to build a lasting legacy through marriage, you're going to have to not just day one, not just year one, you're going to have to give yourself to consistent change. That you've got to be and become a different version of yourself. I'm not talking about compromising yourself.
Right.
I'm talking about becoming better.
Yes.
I hope today that I'm a better version of myself than I was 10 years ago.
Right. I don't try now and like Corvettes.
Right.
Because I'm not going to. So it's not about you have to become something different. I think it's about changing maybe how I respond to you, how I hear your heart, what I assume, how I mind read, right? And sometimes even changing in the sense of like, he might like a Corvette night.
Yeah.
And that's really embarrassing to me.
And steak.
Lots of steak, right? And so a part of me changing isn't me changing who I am, but it is maybe changing how I treat him one night. Right? And sometimes it does start, like, let's be real, like, it starts sometimes with just truly white-knuckling it. And just being like, I love him, I'm gonna do this, right? He loves me, and then it becomes natural. And now we laugh, because now, like, my car is spotless now, and I love everything tidy. And it's not how I came into this relationship, but because I really worked on that, it stressed him out when everything was a mess all the time. So I love him enough to work on that. And now I love it. Now what I once white-knuckled and was just like, oh, the psychopath, right? Now
this
I'm like...
It's becoming a trend.
Now I'm like, on my way to the car membership, I'll be home after, right? Or the car wash membership. So it can start so angry. And it can turn out to be so beautiful.
Yes.
And helpful when we both... Yes. And I think you've adopted some of my...
And I think this next one leads into it. It is commitment to serve.
Yeah.
So I think when you're young and you're getting married... Your thought is like, I cannot wait to get married and be served. There are not a lot of people that are just like, I cannot wait to get married and die to my desires, die to my flesh, serve, do things I don't want to do at times of the day that I don't want to do, right? No one's like really excited about that. But to build lasting legacy in marriage, it is a commitment to serve.
Yeah.
Really, true love is service. And a lot of people get married, and single people, I would just try to internalize this. Make sure you're getting married for the right reason. Because a lot of times you can get married so that you get something.
Yeah.
And it will do something for you, for you. But the first motivation has to be what you can serve or what you can give. It's a commitment to serve. Another one, a commitment to counsel. I want you to really try to hear me on this. Some people are anti-counseling, anti-coaching. I'm just gonna tell you this. You need a third party to be able to speak into your life. it is invaluable. And I'm not talking about just anybody, and I'm definitely not talking about your divorce friends. And we love everybody, but I'm telling you, your divorce friend is not the best person to give you advice when you're going through a difficult time in your marriage. I don't need somebody I need somebody that loves me, that has weathered storms in their own marriage, that loves me enough to tell me the truth, and will pray with me and speak that truth to me. That commitment to counsel has saved our marriage. Yeah,
100%.
Whether that's professional counseling, whether that's a mentor, whether that's a family member that you trust, but having another voice. And can I just help everybody? Can we not wait until the day before we serve papers to ask for help? If your marriage is great, awesome. Ask for help. Well, I don't even know what to ask. You'll find something. Just ask for help. Do you know the best athletes in the world have coaches? Mm-hmm. The best athletes in the world have coaches. When they're at the prime, when they're at the height of success, why do they have coaches? Because coaches can see what the athlete cannot see. Yeah. When people speak into your marriage, they can see what you cannot.
And I think the church has done a disservice in this area in some ways. Because just the church, the global church, is that there can be the pressure to perform.
Yeah.
Or the pressure of perfection and just put on the happy face and God is good and we're dying inside. I've been there. I've walked that lobby feeling like I'm dying inside, right? And what we want for this church and all the people a part of it that we love so much is for that to be removed. The stigma of marriage is in trouble, the stigma of I'm going through a hard time, the stigma of I'm so lonely, I'm deep in depression, but if I say it, I'm going to get judged. Right. And I feel like we're on a crusade to remove that from this house so that everybody has a safe place to get well. We've had to get well before. Mm. We want everybody well. And I think it does take boldness, though, especially for men.
Yeah.
I think, who yeah. feel the extra pressure of to be perfect.
Yeah.
And the boldness of saying, I need some help.
Yes.
So and good. Again, this isn't wine night with the ladies, right? Or wing night with the guys where we just trash our husbands. This is me. Pastor Steve, like, I need it. I need help.
Yeah.
Lisa, can you call me? I'm in trouble. And that has done everything.
Yeah.
For
us. I got a text.
Everything.
I got a text from one of my buddies this last week or the week before. And he said, hey, I could really use somebody to talk to. I could really use some prayer. I'm really going through it right now. Mm-hmm. And I was so proud of him because that's difficult to do. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to make that reach and to like drop the facade that not everything is great and everything's perfect and we're all happy and we just love each other so much. It like, man, I might need a little encouragement. Yeah. Did you know that's what the body's supposed to be?
Right. That's the point.
Is the safe place for us to encourage one another? It is inevitable that you will go through storms,
yes,
difficulties, ups and downs, but you don't have to stay there or be scarred there.
Yes.
You can move through them. And with the support of people and church and community and friends and mentors, we can start leaving legacy in marriages.
Yes, really.
Instead of just the ruins of what marriages that used to be, we can start building towers of legacy that are passed on to the next and the next and the next generation.
Yes.
But it's a commitment to receive counsel.
Yes.
There's a couple others that we don't have time for, but I'll just give them to you quickly so you have them if you're taking notes. But it's the commitment to forgive. I used to always think in my mind, what was the thing that I could forgive and what was the thing that I couldn't forgive? Did you know that's actually not what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the commitment to be a forgiver, which means whatever comes our way, we're going to forgive. That doesn't mean there's not consequences or pain or that happened as a result of choices, but I don't have a bar in my mind that if Jamie crosses that bar, I will not forgive it because I am a forgiver. Jesus forgave me and I forgive others.
Yes.
Jesus forgave Jamie and Jamie forgives me.
Yes.
So this commitment is not commit to forgive her for that thing. I have a commitment to be a forgiver.
Yeah, so good.
Lasting marriages, happy marriages are a beautiful union of two forgivers that consistently forgive. A commitment to be faithful to one another. This is a given, but it goes more than just adultery. It goes deeper than that. It's that I am committed, not just physically, but emotionally, right? There's no other person or thing that is taking the place of what Jamie should feel for me or what I should feel for her. So it's a commitment to faithfulness, and you have to fight for that. The longer you're married, the more you can be complacent, and the easier some things, even not just people, things can come in. You have to fight to remain in intimacy and connection with one another. It's a commitment to be faithful. It's a commitment to the local church.
Yes.
We touched on this earlier, but I want my boys to date girls that are women of God. So the place that I'm going to be more than any other is the Church of Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Because the girls that they're going to be around are not going to be girls they find at the club or find out even in the sports world or what. They're going to find them in the church. Because this legacy is getting passed on.
Yeah.
So I've got to spend more time here than I do anywhere else, because they will be a product of the atmospheres and environments that they're subjected to. So I can't be mad at Jude when he dates a non-Christian girl if I've never had him in Christian environments with Christian girls. This is practical. This is the commitment to the local church. Even today, us talking about some of these things. For some of you, you're single and you're like, man, this is, it's setting the trajectory for my next couple years. Some of you, you're married and the conviction of the Holy Spirit's hitting you and like, I've got to lean in on this. Just us thinking about it. It might be something that we didn't even mention, but just us applying our minds to think about it is leveling up the potential of leaving a lasting legacy. The last one, and this one actually is real fun to think about, and we think about it. It's the commitment to growing old together. So the thing I never thought about when I got married was growing old. In fact, it took me quite a few years before I ever even just admitted that I was aging at all. Age is undefeated. We're gonna get old. We're gonna get older. Our bodies are gonna decay. We're gonna do our very best to stay young and sexy as long as we can. It's only gonna last so long. So if that's the only thing we're holding on to, is the commitment to keep each other as the model that we had of them in their 20s, this thing is gonna decay. You have to love more than what you were. And you have to love more than what you thought it would be. You actually have to step into intimacy where you love the person. So the commitment is, we're gonna grow old together. We're gonna watch Jude and Jen's kids. That's our grandkids. We're gonna watch them love Jesus. We're gonna be old loving each other. You know how many couples I talk to that when their kids leave home, they get divorced? Because their entire epicenter of the world has been the kids, and they've lost this. The kids leave and they don't know how to relate. They don't know how to hang out. They don't know how to communicate because everything has been centered around the kids. We heard somebody, I can't remember who told us this, but we have just adopted it as ours, that kids are a happy addition, a welcome addition to an already happy life. Our kids don't run our world. They're welcome to our world. Mm-hmm. This is what was here before them, and this is what will be here after them. It's a commitment to grow old together. When you start having vision that looks beyond, it changes the way that you live now. When I'm in my 20s and we're just trying to have a good time, trying to just, man, our chemistry, all of those things, you're not thinking about 50. You're not thinking about 60. You're not thinking about 30 years of marriage. You're not thinking about that. But now as we grow older, it's like, man, it would have helped me then to have a commitment to this, a commitment to just grow old together. So let me just say it this way as we close. You can't change, if you're married right now, you can't change your marriage today in a split second and heal all our decisions of the past. What you can do today is change your trajectory.
Yes.
I'm a big trajectory guy. So if my boys' grades are going in the right trajectory, I feel okay, right? But if the grades are going in the, I don't, if they get 1C, okay, I'm gonna be all right. But if the trajectory is the 1C becomes 2Cs, becomes 3Cs, become, whoa, we're going the wrong way. For many of us, the trajectory of our marriage is going the wrong way. So you know what you can do today? Is you can adjust the trajectory. Is it gonna be better tomorrow? No, but you're gonna start a journey that adjust the trajectory, that adjust the destination where you end up at. Neutral will lead you to where you don't want to be, not caring, being numb. You have to be intentional about the legacy that God wants to leave through your life. And when you're intentional, you will adjust that trajectory. And I don't care what you've been through. I care, but let me hear me on this. No matter what the pain or storm, and even as we, first service, I was saying this and like I got hit with waves of emotion because I started thinking of stories. So many people that had made major mistakes or thought things were over. Young couple like Sherwin, 27 years old and thinking like, we had all these dreams, all this desire for legacy, and I think it's just too hard. I think we're just gonna call it quits. But in a couple meetings, wise counsel and the community of local church with an injection of faith, they decided to change their entire trajectory. And now they're testifying on a video of how God changed their marriage. So hear my heart. You may have been married a long time, but it doesn't have to stay what it is. You may have been single for a long time and it doesn't have to be what it is. You can adjust the trajectory today. Pastor, you don't know how much I've hurt my wife, the wounds that I've caused. You know what? You're gonna have to come face to face with those decisions. And that's not gonna be easy. But I'm gonna tell you this, is that God can heal every wound.
Yes.
He can heal every heart. He can redeem every story. If there's one thing that I know about God, is that there is no person that's too far gone, a relationship that's too far gone, that God cannot change a heart. We could take the rest of the day telling you stories of how God's changed hearts, softened hearts, changed marriages, changed trajectories. And I want you to know that our church is gonna be known for the legacy, not just the desire for a legacy, but the legacy that comes through marriage.
Amen.
For all you that have been married a really long time, I'm really proud of you. Thank you for weathering storms to be an example to the next generation.
So good.
Because people are getting divorced at 2 years and 4 years and 7 years. And it's so sad, their whole entire lives ahead of them. But friends, if you do some of these practical things, you will completely change the trajectory. You do not have to be unhappy and unfulfilled. God can redeem your story and your life. And I want to close with this thought. And this is how he does it. God does it when he's at the center of it. You know what the book of Matthew, it says, actually, I want to read this scripture. I'm supposed to close, but I'm going to read this real fast because you know this scripture. Matthew chapter 7, it says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock." Do you know how you build your life on the rock? It said in the first verse, it said how to do it. It said, do what he says. Those who put his words into practice are like a wise man who built their house upon the rock. Everybody wants a house on the rock. Everybody wants a marriage on the rock, but you don't get it unless you put his words into practice. It cannot just be checking a box. It cannot just be beliefs. It has to be behavior. It has to trickle down into your heart to actually affect the way that we live. And I felt like today, and some of you are going to give your heart to Jesus for the very first time, and some of you are going to come back to Jesus. But I felt strongly like all of us just needed a fresh commitment to put Christ at the center. You know what? I think even sometimes I had Jamie more at the center than I had Christ. Just trying to please and trying to change and trying to serve, and it's not working. I'm trying to love. It's like, wait, I think the priorities are wrong, because I can only love her correctly if I love him completely. And when he becomes the center, this thing begins to work.